Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 3 of Game On with Cody and John.
This episode's big deal, Requiem for a Theme. There are many things that make a game great,
but is theme one of them? We'll talk about it.
And in our Buy, Try, or Deny segment, World of Warcraft the Adventure Game.
Is it for level 70 elites or for level 1 noobs? We'll find out.
All of this and more on this episode of Game On with Cody and John.
Howdy gamers, you're listening to Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. How's it going, Cody?
It's going. The Colts are a depressing 1-2.
Yeah, so not the best.
Not great. I'm going to have to really bring it together here to do the podcast tonight.
Yeah, that's okay. Just stay strong, and we're going to talk about some games that don't involve the Colts losing.
Okay, yeah, those are my favorite games.
Yeah, well, welcome to our show for this episode. We've got a lot of great stuff coming. We're really excited to be bringing you our third episode, just kind of keeping up with the momentum. We've got a lot of great response from you guys.
Definitely.
in the Game Definitely. On inbox, and we really do appreciate all you listening. I know it seems like we're saying that a lot, but it's true. We can't do this without the listeners, and so we just really appreciate you guys.
Thank you very much. We've got a great big deal for you this week. We're going to be talking about themes in gaming, kind of a continuation of last week's Great Divide theme in a way.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the themes in lots of different games. How important is theme? Is it important? And just go through some games that have heavy theme, games that have light theme. Well, we'll get there.
And on our Buy, Try, or Deny, we've got a fairly new game yet again. We have World of Warcraft, the adventure game.
Continuing the theme of us being the Fantasy Flight fanboy podcast.
Oh, that was good.
Just kidding. We're going with another Fantasy Flight game designed by Corey Konietzka of Battlestar Galactica, StarCraft fame, and we're going to take a look at that and let you know what we thought of it.
Yep.
But we always kick off every episode with a Game On inbox, and that starts
right now.
It's time for the Game On inbox. Here you'll find gaming news, information, discussion, as well as feedback from you, the listener. Send questions, comments, and brilliant ideas to gameoninbox@gmail.com. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Let's double click on our inbox and see what we find.
All right, listeners, we are in the Game On inbox, and first things first, we're going to talk about games that we played. John, why don't you start us off?
All right, well, the first game I want to talk about is one that I unfortunately had to play by myself.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, as you gamers know, sometimes it's easy to find other players to play games with, and sometimes it's not. And last night, I was kind of interested in playing a board game. My wife wasn't interested, and the kids were in bed. So I just decided to pull out a copy of a game that I know is pretty good for solo play, and that is Pandemic.
The very popular Pandemic with our listeners.
Very popular, and I think even increasingly popular because it's currently out of print, and it won't be re-released until, I think, October, November, something like that. So, yeah, I played a solo game of that, and all I did was just used two characters and two sets of cards.
Sure.
And but it was a lot of fun, even though it wasn't a real good outcome for the world.
You did not save the world and all of mankind.
No, the whole world was pretty much ravaged with disease of
nice
various colors.
Nice
yeah, but it was.
You might
want to
try winning next time.
Yeah, I'll give that a try. Maybe you could come over and play with me.
No, if I was playing Pandemic, we'd probably lose. I'm not very good at that.
Okay, well, then another game that Cody and I had the opportunity to play a week or so ago is a brand new card game from a small company in Massachusetts called Asmodee Games, and the name of the game is We Didn't Play Test This at All.
Fantastic.
And for those of you who may have played the game Flux by Looney Labs, it's a really just a light card game that is similar to Flux in that it's real chaotic, but it's just a you just kind of read what's on the cards. The card quality, quality of the cards is fine, but it's just like black text, you know, no pictures at all. It's
Microsoft Word produced cards.
Yeah.
It looks like.
Yeah. And, but it's just terrific fun, and you can play a game in literally I mean, 5 minutes would be a long game, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I'd been looking forward to playing this one for a while, and it's a hoot. It's a good start player mechanic, even if you want something light to warm up with. It's a great game. Yeah. Some people kind of rag on it on the Geek, but it's fun.
Yeah, we'd suggest you check it out, and we'll put a link to Asmodee Games' website in the show notes so you can go check it out. So I've also had an opportunity to play quite a bit of Magic the Gathering lately, and this is the game that sort of got me into gaming, but I hadn't played regularly in quite some time. Cody and I had played together a little bit.
A couple times, yeah.
But our good gaming buddy Single L, who you may not know, but he's actually a coworker of mine, we've been getting together for lunch once a week and playing Magic, and we actually found another guy in our office who has played for years, and so we've gotten him in on it. And today we actually had a fourth player come in.
You're getting quite the following there.
We were kind of thinking that after a while we could just have an entire booster draft like during lunch.
I need to become a scientist. I picked the wrong field.
Come on downtown sometime and play with us. So that's been a whole lot of fun. So just wanted to mention that.
Now the next expansion for that is coming out October 3rd, Shards of Alara.
Yeah, that's the brand new expansion, and I think there's some pre-release tournaments going on the weekend of the 27th. So by the time you hear this podcast, those will have already happened. But yeah, October 3rd, you'll be able to pick up your new cards for that set if you're a Magic player.
Yep, check out the Wizards of the Coast website at wizards.com. We'll have a link in the show notes for that if you want some more information on the new set. Now, in a different bit of gaming news, John, you picked up a new gaming item recently. Tell us about it.
There is a new addition in our household. And it does not require diaper changes or anything like that. No, no.
Good.
Cody always likes to joke me and my wife about us having a third kid, but that's probably not going to happen.
All right.
it's now laid down in audio form. That's probably not in the offing. But anyway, no, we happen to have picked up a Nintendo Wii.
All right.
And which is a lot more fun than a newborn baby, I can tell you. But anyway.
Nice.
I gotta be honest, but I love my kids, but you know, so we picked up that. Of course, it comes with Wii Sports, so we've been playing a lot of tennis and bowling. My five-year-old
tell us about
son.
Bowling.
Well, the bowling game is great, and you know, right before we started recording this podcast, actually, Cody and I played a little game of bowling, and what was the final score on that?
I got a 200, and you got less.
Well, quite a bit less, I think. Yeah. So Cody's got this really neat, like, you know, curving technique for the ball. It's very expert. I aspire to be so great.
And if I could ever beat my real bowling score of like 110, then I'll be all right.
That's the great thing about video games, that you can usually do better than you would in real life.
I'd rather be better at real bowling. I'm pretty pathetic.
Yeah. So, you know, the Wii is just terrific fun. If, you know, and it's been around for a while, I guess now, but if you've never checked that out, definitely check the Wii out. It's great. Great time.
All right. Now we'll move into some gaming news.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll just go ahead and start off with a couple of things that I found online about the upcoming releases of games. From Asmodee Editions, who are the producer of lots of games. Most recently, we've discussed games like Jamaica and the brand new version of Formula Day that's going to be called Formula D. They've just announced that they're going to be publishing a new title from designer Christoph Bollinger, who is the designer of the game Dungeon Twister.
No, a good game. We've played it a few times.
It's kind of a themed version of chess almost. It's got an abstract strategy feel to it. Kind of a little bit of a brain burner sometimes,
yeah.
But a lot of fun. So this new game is going to be called Draco Mundus or Draco Mundus.
Draco.
Is it Draco?
Draco Malfoy.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I don't know.
So, and that actually is going to be a little bit similar to Dungeon Twister in certain ways, but it's going to be a 2-4 player game. And the artwork on it looks pretty cool. It almost looks kind of, you know, actually it looks kind of cartoony in the same way that Jamaica is cartoony. It's got the same, I don't know if it's the same artist or not, but it looks like it's going to be pretty good. And of course, Christoph Bollinger put out a great game in Dungeon Twister. So yep. I encourage you to check that one out when it comes out.
Yeah. And we also have a, from the maker of Power Grid, Mr. Friedemann Fries. And John's a big Power Grid fan, and personally, out of all the games I've played, Power Grid's one of them. There'll be a new game called, is it Flussfieber?
I think it's Flussfieber, but I don't speak German. Yeah.
I don't either.
All of Friedemann Fries's games tend to start with F. He's had Fearsome Floors and Funny Friends and
Power Grid.
Well, which in German is Funkenschlag. So
I just need to learn German. I'll be a hit at parties.
Yeah. So this game is Flussfieber, and it's actually a game about river rafting. So it's for 2 to 5 players, and it's going to be released at the Essen Spiel game convention, and it will be produced by a 2F Spiele, and in the United States, Rio Grande Games is going to pick that one up. So if you like Freedom on Freeze's games, it's got the same artwork by Mara Kaluski that a lot of his other games like Power Grid and Fearsome Friends and all.
Good artwork.
Yeah, I do like the really artwork. Unique. Yeah, so be sure to check that one out.
Now, this is news to me. It says in my notes here, a DICE expansion to Ticket to Ride. Go on.
Yeah, well, last episode you mentioned the Ticket to Ride expansion.
Sure. And, it's coming.
And no, you're right. There is a new expansion for Ticket to Ride coming out, and it's going to be the DICE expansion. It's going to retail for about $20. You're going to get a set of dice and an actual pretty nice dice cup. And this can be added to any Ticket to Ride game. And what the dice will basically do, from what I've read, is replace the cards. So instead of taking train cars, you're going to be doing some kind of mechanic where you're going to be rolling these dice to be able to lay down your tracks.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm sure the motivation behind it is that Days of Wonder would like to make more money off of Ticket to Ride. But for those of you who like to add dice to your game, I think this could be interesting. I think this is one that I'm definitely going to pick up.
Yeah, I think Ticket to Ride Indiana is going to be next, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
You have one route, Indianapolis to Chicago.
And yeah, and you're done. That's it. You win.
All right, we're going to move into listener feedback. We had a lot of great comments on our big deal topic, The Great Divide.
Yeah, this has definitely been a topic that I'm sure has been on the minds of some of you gamers out there, because we got a lot of great responses, a lot of questions, a lot of feedback and commentary. Great stuff to hear.
Yeah, some of the funnier comments we got, one came from Andrew McCall of New Zealand, where he said, Euro games are more exciting with drinking. I've not tried that.
I have not tried the Euro game plus alcohol combination, but...
I would have to have quite a bit of alcohol to play a game of Carcassonne. I would have to be quite legally drunk to do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're ever going to get so far to that point.
But on a more serious note, listener Daryl Rice emailed and said that it sounds like the way to make it a hybrid for you, well, for us, is to roll dice. Is it the randomness / chance aspect you like versus no randomness like in Kalis? It certainly isn't complexity if you like Descent. No, we're not against complex games.
Yeah.
He said he likes games that have a little of each. Nothing's more fun than triumphing over long odds on a key roll, although nothing more frustrating than having it go the other way if you can't control the odds.
Yeah, you know, I think that the games that we mentioned as far as being hybrid games, maybe we should have come up with a more comprehensive list of what we would consider hybrid games.
Sure.
The ones we picked, like... Kingsburg, mm-hmm. And that is definitely the dice that are making it sort of that hybrid factor. But I think that it kind of goes beyond that. And actually, we're probably going to touch on this in a little bit in the big deal where we talk about theme. I think the big Ameritrash Euro game thing, in my opinion, comes down more to theme. So we're going to expand upon that in just a little bit. So stay tuned, Daryl.
And listener Simon Wilcock from the United Kingdom wrote in and said that to him, a style of game that is designed to be relatively short, that's more his definition of a Euro game. The mechanics is to keep everyone in the game up until the very end, whereas Ameritrash is tends to have more of a theme in the driver's seat than mechanics.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't even thought about that with as far as player elimination goes, that
sure.
there aren't too many Euro games I can think of that have player elimination. You're pretty much in it for the whole time. Yeah. Yep.
For good or for ill, everyone's in it. I personally like Ameritrash games where you can blow someone out of the water fairly early in some cases.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, one great comment that we got from Stephen, I think it's Buonocore, was that he feels that gamers really just need to grow up.
Amen.
And he meant that, in the most cordial way possible, that you know, all of these arguments and issues regarding games, especially Ameritrash versus Eurogame. And matter of fact, he even said that he doesn't really use those terms, Ameritrash or Eurotrash. That's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of become a term of endearment for Cody and I.
Definitely.
But he just said that, you know, we need to grow the hobby together, regardless of what type of games we prefer to play. And he writes that he prefers American games, but he wants to have lots of Euros to come out. And and that more and more gamers will find them and play them. And he also wants to see more American games come out and more gamers to find them and play them. The more of this that happens, the bigger the hobby gets, the more games we get, and it's a good cycle for all of us.
Yep. I think he's absolutely right. As long as people are playing games.
Yep. That's the point, because we still have it's still a relatively small hobby when you compare it to a lot of other things that are out there.
Definitely.
And it's definitely one that's worth growing.
So, Steven, you come to Indianapolis and we'll play.
How absolutely. Call us up.
And while we're on that topic, listener Brian Lucier of Minnesota and noted Vikings fan. Sorry
about that.
Yeah. He asked, what type of things can we gamers do in order to broaden the player base for the hobby that we love? And personally, I think it's just make the hobby more accessible. A lot of what Steven said, just cut down on the division and just play the dang games.
Right. And I think that there's been a lot of emphasis recently on gateway games, because that's a real desire of a lot of gamers. We want to get more people in the boat, more people into the pool, if you will. And I think that those kind of games, gateway games, are a good way to do that. And I think that sometimes it just starts with friends and family. You find a friend or a family member who maybe has a passing interest in something like that, and you invite them over, and you're just friendly with them and get them involved in the game. That's what's happened with me at work, is just like I may have mentioned before, Single L, our gaming buddy, wasn't really a gamer at all just 6 months ago, and just from me talking with him and getting him involved in some of our game nights.
Oh my!
I know,
the floodgates have opened.
It's terrible, but I feel like he's turned into a pretty enthusiastic gamer. So
yeah, and he's one of the more fun people that I've played games with, just because a lot of these games are mechanics he's never seen before, and it's new to him, and he's just really getting into it, and it gives you a fresh set of eyes to look at it.
Yeah, I think it's something that just builds one person at a time.
Now, going on in the inbox from you listeners, we did have a contest.
Yes, we did.
John turns like 86 on Friday.
Yes, 86, 32, something like that.
Something
I don't
like
know.
That.
It's old.
So we asked you, the listeners, what game would you want most for your birthday?
And you know what? I was really pretty surprised by the responses that we got. I shouldn't be surprised. Once I thought about it, it made total sense. But
I know where you're going.
The majority of the games that we got in the inbox are really, really expensive games. So it was like, I think one listener wrote in and said, I want Battle Lore with all the expansions.
You think you're getting that?
Doubtful.
No, I'm not getting it for you.
Okay. And another listener, several listeners wrote in with saying Pandemic. One listener said Antiquity, which is a pretty difficult to find game. Mm. I think that the term that is used a lot of time is Grail games, because it's like getting the Holy Grail to get a game.
Star
like
Wars
that.
The Queen's Gambit.
Star Wars the Queen's Gambit is one that's I think I saw a copy of that at Gen Con this year for $225. So, but yeah, you guys definitely had the right idea of ask for something expensive, aim high when it comes to the birthday game. So thanks for your responses. It was great to hear all of them.
And we randomly determined the winner. And John, you want to announce it?
The winner of this episode's contest and recipient of the Catan dice game. There it is.
There's that bag of potatoes again.
It's almost like a drum roll. Your winner is Keith Creighton.
Keith Kalis Creighton.
All right, Keith. Well, congratulations. And you've got a copy of the Catan dice game coming to you. We'd love for you to email us back at the Game On Inbox.
It's gameoninbox@gmail.com.
I promise you, it's still gameoninbox@gmail.com.
That's nice.
It's good.
That's what we call an echo in the business.
I tell you, we're getting so good at this. But Keith, if you will just email us back with your address, and we will get that game out to you. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Now, we have a new contest, as we are the podcast for you, the common gamer.
Absolutely. Again, we just love to give stuff away and to bribe you into listening.
It is the quickest way to your heart.
So we got a different sort of contest this time. The last, our first two episodes, we had you email in with the name of some games, answering a question or so. But for this episode, we have a brand new way to reach out to you, the listener, and to have you reach out to us and to connect with you.
And what way would that be?
We have created our own guild on BoardGameGeek.com.
Whoa.
Yeah, and this is something that a lot of other podcasts have done. This is not a particularly new thing, but we've seen that with other podcasts, it's a very good way to get listeners involved, and we've told you before that we want to hear from you, and that's true. But I think another valuable thing is for you listeners to hear from each other and to be able to talk about things, talk about the show, talk about other topics related to gaming. So we've created this space on the web at BoardGameGeek.com where you can do that. So for this episode's contest, in order to enter the contest, all you need to do is go and check out the guild at BoardGameGeek.com. You just can sort of click on the area that says guilds and find ours under podcasts, Game On with Cody and John. And there will be a thread on our forums on the guild that will say episode 3 contest.
And all you have to do is post in that thread, post whatever witty thing you'd like to. But once you've posted in there, feel free to post other places on the guild site. You know, we don't just want you to enter the contest. You're not off the hook.
Right, yeah. We really want to build up this community and just to get you guys connected to each other and connected to us. So we're all everyday gamers here, and we just want to talk about stuff.
And what will the lucky contest winner receive?
Well, the winner of this episode's contest will receive a copy of Fairy Tale.
Fairy Tale.
Yep, Fairy Tale by Z-Man Games. It's a great card game with a neat drafting mechanic. It's a really, really very fun game, and it's going to be coming to you if you're the winner of our contest.
Now, this doesn't get you off the hook as far as the Game On inbox goes.
Oh, no.
No, we still want you to write in with your questions, comments, feedback, and we've gotten a lot of good feedback from you guys.
Yep, and we just love to hear from you, and so we encourage you to still, if you've got questions for us, we'd love to answer them. We'll read your feedback on the air. This is your podcast just as much as it's ours.
Definitely, and we'll be checking the forums, so check us out on BoardGameGeek.com.
And also check us out on GameOnInbox at gmail.com.
That's GameOnInbox at gmail.com.
Is it really?
That's what I've heard. That okay. Is the rumor.
Fantastic. Check us out.
We should say it a few more times.
I think so. All right, well, I think it's time for us to close the Game On inbox for this episode and get into our big deal.
Let's do it.
And now it's time for the big deal. Whether it's an interview, an in-depth review of a convention or gaming event, or a discussion on a gaming-related topic, every episode of Game On, we will do our very best to answer that eternal, burning question. What's the big deal? All right, welcome to the big deal. This episode we're going to be talking about theme.
Requiem for a Theme.
Requiem for a Theme. Clever name, huh? We spent hours coming up with that.
Who needs show notes when you have a stupid name?
Exactly. Here at Game On, we promise to bring you stupid names for every episode.
It is our promise to you, the listeners.
Anyway, after last episode's discussion about the Great Divide, things like Ameritrash versus Eurogames, and, well, especially that topic, Cody and I decided we wanted to delve a little bit deeper into this concept of theme in games. And how important is theme in games? You know, there's themes we love, themes we hate, and I think a lot would agree that a balance between those two things, between theme and mechanics, is an important thing.
All right, we wanted to talk about what makes a good theme. A lot of it used to be, you know, a relation to current culture, you know, Monopoly in the 1930s with the Depression, things like that. You'd have a lot of games based on TV shows, movies, game shows, you know, you've won the home edition of Name That Tune.
That sounds fascinating.
Wink Martindale, not included. You have, for example, in RPGs, kind of going away from the board game mentality for a second, themes are usually the reason you buy the game. You know, you buy Dungeons & Dragons because you want a fantasy game. You buy Call of Cthulhu because you want a horror mystery RPG.
Yeah, you buy Star Wars because you really want to shoot lasers and be a Jedi.
Sure, you know. Mm-hmm. Jedis don't use lasers. They use lightsabers.
Well, you want to shoot lasers and then subsequently be a Jedi after
okay.
You turn away from your laser-wielding ways.
Very good. There are a few RPGs which are mechanics only, and it's kind of a you put the theme in yourself, but the majority of the best-selling RPGs are heavily themed. And I think that translates well into board games, even though there are many that have no theme at all or a light theme. I guess we should start this by, to you, John, what does a theme in a board game mean to you?
Well, for me personally, it's an important element. I'm someone who personally doesn't really like abstract strategy games that much. And when I think lack of theme, that's the first thing that comes to mind. Something like chess, which is a great classic game, of course, you know, and it's just not a game that interests me. I have a hard time getting into a game where I don't feel like my actions are meaningful as far as putting forth some sort of a story. And that's just my opinion and the kind of games that I like. But, well, Cody, what about you?
I really like knowing, I guess, why I'm doing a certain action, or I like relating the mechanics of a game to the theme. It's like, oh, I'm drawing cards because it represents my army training and power, just to, you know, reference no particular game at all. Or I'm rolling dice to see which advisors I influence, like in Kingsburg, things like that.
Yeah, but if it's something that's just, you know, you're claiming a piece so that you can put it next to you on the board and
right, yeah.
claim a certain number of pieces, not quite as exciting.
No. To me, and this kind of goes along with my Ameritrash background, theme is very important to me. I like a well-themed game and a heavily themed game at that, you know, where all of the components match with the theme. The board is very well done, things like that. Without going too much into components, I like my theme all across the game, not just in the mechanics.
Yeah, I think that highlights just an interesting difference between different kinds of gamers, is that some folks that are really into abstract games, it's the thinking element of the game. It's the figuring out of things. It's the lack of luck in a game like that is going to make it interesting for them. Whereas I got to admit, just an extension of our conversation from last episode, I like really heavily themed games and games with a luck element, because I'm not very good at games. I mean, I'll be the first to admit it, that, you know, for being a gamer, I'm competitive just like the next guy, but I'm terrible at a lot of games. And if there's not some sort of random decision maker that can help to swing things in my favor, I'm just going to be frustrated all the time.
Yeah. No, you're not that bad. I am undefeated at Kingsburg, which is...
Yeah, and you're leading in pizza box football too, I think,
by
several games. So
yeah, that's
and that is a luck based game. Yeah. So I'm just hosed either way, really.
Maybe if we play Kalos or Carcassonne, you might pull ahead of me there.
Yeah, like you and I will ever play Carcassonne.
Probably not. Yeah. But
well, anyway, so you know, it's a question I guess we pose to you listeners: is theme important to you? And if so, what makes it important? You know, a couple of things that I thought of were that. In a heavily themed game, that much like a book that you're reading or a good movie that you're watching, is it really helps to immerse you in the experience. And it gives some context to the actions that you're making in a game. So if you're rolling dice or if you're moving a piece around, if it's a heavily themed game, then you feel like that action has some meaning to it, that it's helping to perpetuate some sort of story. And so these meaningful actions make the game more exciting.
Yeah, like I said earlier, that's the kicker to me, is I want to be immersed in the game. I don't want to feel like I'm just drawing cards, rolling dice, moving pawns around. It's like I'm moving Frodo to Mount Doom, and I'm rolling to see if he chucks the ring in the crack of doom. That's a big part for me.
One of the games that Cody and I really enjoy playing is Fury of Dracula.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a game that it's got a lot of great mechanics to it, but it's really heavily themed, and... And almost some sort of, I guess, sort of plays out like an RPG sometimes, even though there's really no role playing involved. We do find ourselves, if we were playing the Dracula role, both
the nighttime is the night.
You must come to the castle. Yeah, we start kind of getting into that, and that makes it a lot more fun. And we found that there have been sessions of Fury of Dracula where we've talked about it for days later about what great game that was. And I just have to say that for a less themed game, I don't find myself going back and reminiscing about the excitement of that game.
Definitely.
But again, a personal preference and weigh it out for yourself as to what's important to you.
And I can see how some people would say a theme would get in the way. You know, it's like, I could see a lot of people and they're not wrong by any means. You know, they just want to sit down and play the game. They don't want a story being told to them. They don't want... You know, all this kind of, to them, would be extraneous stuff. They just want to sit down, play the strategy game, and enjoy it.
Yeah, I've kind of found that there's been some friends that I've tried to introduce role-playing games to, and they haven't actually enjoyed playing with role-playing games because of that reason. They've told me that they prefer a board game because it's got a very fixed set of rules, and it's very well-defined, and you can sit and play it in a certain amount of time, and... almost that lack of imagination factor makes it more appealing than an RPG would, where RPGs are so much based upon what you can do with your imagination.
Sure. There's kind of like a set list of actions you can do on your turn instead of having a much larger, almost a limitless list like in a role-playing game.
Right. And that can be a little overwhelming, I think, especially for a new RPG player, that if you ask the question, so what do you do? And their response is, well, what can I do? And their response is anything. And that's a little bit daunting for them.
Right. you know, some of the games that we thought of were heavier in theme and lighter on the mechanics. My first kind of non-standard board game, Talisman, I believe that's a very heavily themed game because the mechanics are, it's a roll and move.
Yeah, it's a roll and move and do what's on the square and, you know, roll dice, you know, at certain times. But
you're moving to get that crown of command and lord over all the other players. But essentially, you're just rolling dice, drawing cards.
And that's another game that, since it's been around for many, many years and new editions have come out, I think, Cody, you've even said that that's one of the first non-standard board games that you played. And so you have really good memories that are associated with game. And those memories aren't probably associated with the mechanics of the game.
No. Yeah. No, it's just competitive games and, you know, oh, you know, I screwed over that character in the end. It was awesome and things like that. It's like, yeah. You don't get that out of games of Blockus, you know, not to say Blockus is a bad game, but, you know.
Another game that's really, I would say, heavy on theme but lighter on the mechanics is the zombie game Last Night on Earth.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it has a soundtrack CD.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have a heavy mechanic game.
You cannot get much more themey than that.
Right. And, you know, that's a game that's got some real easy dice rolling mechanics for combat, but basically it's just trying to immerse you in that world of the B horror or zombie movie.
Right. I mean, when you have characters from the game that walk around the booth at the conventions, you know, you can kind of tell the theme's a pretty heavy part there.
Right, yeah. You don't see that too much with, like, abstract. You don't see, like, chess pieces walking around, you know.
That would be cool, though. Yeah, it would be kind of neat, dress up actually as a bishop and waddle around the hall. Yeah. Pizza Box Football, that's another one that's pretty heavy on the theme.
Yeah, that's a game that Cody and I enjoy playing, especially sometimes to simulate college or pro football matchups. Sure. And it's just, you know, fun dice rolling. And if you play it quickly enough and you're moving the pegs around and you're good to go down the board, you know, you sort of get that color commentary voice, you know, and you know, first down and 10. And you know,
here's a guy.
Brett Favre. You know, so but the actual mechanics of the game are just some real basic dice rolling and looking up stuff on charts. But, you know, again, an enjoyable game with a light mechanics and heavy theme.
Right. And as I mentioned earlier, a lot of TV shows and movies, just to kind of get the game out the door, will kind of stick their label on what may be a simple dice game or a simple roll and move game, just to make a buck, basically. But
yeah, and I think they're banking on people buying the game and seeing the images from their TV show or movie or whatever, and that sort of carrying it. Unfortunately, those games tend to be sometimes light on mechanics and light on theme, light on quality. And
see, also Lost, the game.
Yeah, not great.
I wish I would have lost that one.
You still can.
I think I did. I gave it away.
And one other thing I'm just going to throw in the back end of this list of games that are heavy on theme and light on mechanics, I actually got from the latest episode of The Spiel Podcast. It's another great board game podcast that we would encourage you to listen to in addition to ours.
Definitely.
But they mentioned a game that that they played called Tukulka.
Bless you.
Tukulka. And it's a game about, like, Etruscan gods, and apparently the basics are it's Parcheesi. It's Parcheesi. Okay. With this over-the-top theme thrown on top of it. And so that was just another example of one where they tried to take a game that's real simple and, you know, doll it up with it with a big theme. So
there's a Battle Line, which is a Reiner Canizia joint.
Oh, man.
one of many that Reiner Canizia tends to take a good game and tack on a theme as we move into these.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we start talking about a lot of games that are the opposite kind of that. Yeah. They're light on theme and really heavy on mechanics. Reiner Canizia is a master of this. There's even, we'll put this in the show notes too, because it's kind of funny. There's a company called Game Inc. that makes gamer t-shirts, and they have this great t-shirt that's got a picture of, like, a bottle of Elmer's glue on it, and it's called Reiner's Theme All. You know, just add to your game, you just kind of paste the theme on.
Right.
And so that, his games are really well made, but, you know, they do tend to leave something to be desired in the theme department.
Right, it's you know, Blue Moon City. It has this whole kind of abstract theme with it. You know, oh, you're rebuilding
the city. It's like there's dragons.
No, you're not.
No, you're not. You're moving cubes around.
It's like someone
cards.
Put really cool art on a decent game. You know.
Yeah, and probably the pinnacle of the Canizia relatively themeless game would be Tigris and Euphrates, which is a masterfully designed game from a mechanics standpoint, but you know, when you get into like the internal and external conflicts that occur during the game, it just doesn't really feel like you're doing anything other than just laying tiles, and which is what you're basically doing. But still, nonetheless, a good game, but not going to be one that's necessarily memorable from a theme perspective.
Right, but still a good game, and we stress that, where theme does not necessarily make a great game.
Yeah, absolutely right. You know, our opinions here are definitely coming through as far as, you know, Cody and I are both guys who like these games that have a heavy theme to them, but we don't want to discount games that are lower on the theme and have more of the mechanics.
Definitely
there,
not.
Still a lot of quality there. So games like Kalos, I would say, has kind of a weak theme to it.
Played it. I know that's blasphemy, listeners. But.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's basically a game about, you know, building up a town or a city and along a road, and you know, it's a little weak for me as far as the theme goes.
I'll try it sometime. I'll try any game twice. So
yeah, you know, I actually have the card game Kalos Magna Carta. We should play that because I think that's it's a little bit of a lighter game.
That sounds exciting.
Well, it might be a little bit more to your taste, at least in the brevity.
It's no
department.
Farming.
Easy now.
All right, sorry.
Games like Race for the Galaxy, which is a really great card game with great mechanics, but of totally pasted on space exploration theme. And another one that I thought of was Dungeon Twister, which we talked about earlier, where they tried real hard to put the theme on that one. And there are some thematic elements of the things that you can play, but at the end of the day, it's basically an abstract strategy game where you're trying to figure out how to turn the pieces of the room to get your guys out. And
well, once you get in the middle of that game and you're into like 20-minute turns where everyone's just kind of staring at the board very intently, you're like, maybe this is just a strategy.
You're like, wait a minute, this is a Euro game, but I'm looking at an ogre.
It's like treachery.
They fooled us again.
I was bamboozled. Now, there are many games that have great blends of the two, where the theme and the mechanics meet, and it's just seamless.
Yeah, I agree. Give us some of those on your list.
Well, the first game we reviewed, Battlestar Galactica, I really think the way theme and mechanic blended in that was just great. It didn't feel tacked on. It felt like the natural flow of a episode of the show would go.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that one. Another one that came to mind for me was War of the Ring, which is a pretty involved board game based upon the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And that's one where literally, as you're playing the game, you really feel like you're playing out all of the events of the movies or the books. And very well done. It's a much more complex game as far as mechanics go, but thematically, it's also very, very rich, too.
Right. Descent is another good one.
Oh, you know
one.
I love Descent.
Oh, yeah. You gotta love Descent. The way it uses its cards and dice in relation to how the game goes is just a fantastic mix. I mean, nothing feels forced. Everything really feels like it's a natural fit.
Yeah, everything seems to make sense, and especially since it seems to be a natural extension of something like an RPG or a Dungeons and Dragons style dungeon delve.
A D&D light.
D&D light, yeah. For those that really like the combat or movement mechanics, the dice mechanics of D&D, that's a perfect game for them. And so one other game that fits into this category of a good blend between theme and mechanics, and I almost hesitate to mention it, but it's Agricola.
I think we just need to sit down and play it. I've heard so many good things from you, from our listeners.
Yeah, it's a really good game. We'll try to get it out and play it in the next couple weeks here so that Cody can get a taste of what it's like. You know, the hype machine at Board Game Geek has been building this one up way beyond its actual merits, I think. But it is a really good game, and even though the theme itself is not the most interesting in the world, being farming, but
will Johnny plant a seed? Will Johnny buy a cow?
or Johnny's wife, Janie, she might buy the cow.
Twists and turns.
See, I tell you what, it's intrigue.
I don't know.
But you know, the actual mechanics of trying to build your farm and then having to feed everybody at the end at certain points in the game, it fits. It at least blends well together, even if you're not super interested in the theme. You got to admit that it's a good blend. So that's our opinion on theme, is that we think it's very important to games, and it really enhances the experience of a game. But you know, that's just our opinion, and we really care about your opinions too.
Absolutely, and we'd like to get your thoughts on theme. Is it important to you? how much does theme play in when you purchase a game? Now we have two ways you can contact us. You can contact us via the good old Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
I love when he does that. Or you can go to our newly created guild on BoardGameGeek.com. Just search for Game On with Cody and John. And you can talk to us and discuss with other listeners what you think about theme and games.
Yep, and we'll definitely have a link to our guild directly in the show notes at GameOnPodcast.com.
We make it easier for you.
Absolutely. So we want to hear from you, and we'd love for you guys to just start some discussions. We'll definitely chime in and post, and we're just excited about this community. So tell us what you think about theme.
All right, that was the big deal, and now we're going to journey into the world of Azeroth for World of Warcraft the Adventure Game and Buy, Try, or Deny.
Buy, Try, or Deny. Every episode of Game On, we review a game and offer our opinions to help you decide whether a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on. If we say that a game is a buy, we definitely recommend that you go to your local gaming store or online retailer and purchase it immediately. If we say the game is a try, we think it's a good game and definitely worth playing, but the game may or may not appeal to a certain audience, or it has one or two flaws that may keep you from enjoying it fully. If we deny a game, there is definitely something seriously wrong with the game, and we recommend that you let it continue to collect dust on your game store's shelf. So let's get started. This episode's Buy, Try, or Deny, we'll be talking about World of Warcraft, the adventure game. This is a game from Fantasy Flight Games.
You might have heard of them.
Yeah, a couple of times on this podcast. Released in 2008, designed by Corey Konietzka. It's a game for 2 to 4 players. And this is actually the second game that's been released from the World of Warcraft world by Fantasy Flight Games. The first one being World of Warcraft, the board game.
Ugh.
And I'm going to have to defer to Cody a lot on this particular review for a couple of reasons. One, I have never played the World of Warcraft board game, and Cody has. And two, I know my gamer cred goes down a bit, but I have actually never logged on and played the World of Warcraft massively multiplayer online role-playing game.
It's okay. I'm a recovering addict. Like John mentioned, I did play the original World of Warcraft, the board game, and it was not fun. It was a big, sprawling, epic game, but
Fantasy Flight is wont to do.
Of course, and that's not a bad thing, but just the way they did it, it had so much downtime to it. You're looking at 20 minutes between turns. I mean, it was just a slog by the end of it.
Yeah, that's what I had heard, too, is that it's just this big, bombastic, multiple-hour affair, and so this game, the World of Warcraft adventure game, is designed to be, I guess, a shorter, lighter, and considerably less expensive version of a Warcraft game.
It is all of those things.
Yeah. So it's probably meant to kind of scratch that World of Warcraft itch that you might have if you're not in front of the computer or playing the original board game.
Right.
So we're going to start off by taking a look at the game components. And when you open up the box, you're going to find a very nice game board of typical Fantasy Flight quality. The artwork on the game board is very colorful, and I think the game board is supposed to represent a map, but it's a very abstract sort of map. It's not your typical, if you've ever played Runebound or Descent Road to Legend, any other game that has a map for a board, this is not a typical map.
Right, the map is based off one of the continents in the game, and if you've played it, you'll recognize many familiar locations, and it's a little easier to find your way around if you've played the game, but if you haven't, you're not going to be too much of a handicap because there's only so many spaces on a board.
The best comparison I could make is to Arkham Horror, which is another sort of abstract map with there's locations on the board, circles and squares and that kind of stuff. Then there's just these roads that connect everything together.
Sure.
One interesting thing about the artwork on the board is that there are different regions of the board that are different colors. So there's four different colors that are going to permeate this game: gray, green, yellow, and red. And there are going to be regions on the board that you can only go to if you're a certain level. So those four colors represent the levels you can be in the game. So everybody's going to start off on gray areas, and as you level up, then you can move to different areas of the board.
Right, and the you know, the yellow and the red areas, they correspond to what would logically in the computer game be the higher level, you know, instances or dungeons. You know, it handles in a very sequential order that's logical if you've played the video game. Nothing's a stretch.
Right. So you're going to get some dice. Not very many dice in this
Woo!
Game. Yeah, but just not very many, unfortunately.
Well, no. The original World of Warcraft, the board game, I almost would say, and forgive me, had too many dice.
What?
It's the only time you'll hear me say that.
I don't even know you anymore. this game only comes with three dice. You get a blue die for movement. These are all six-sided dice. A blue die for movement, a red die, and a black die for combat. And that's it. There are four player characters that you can choose from in the game, which represent four of, I think, the most common classes of characters in
Sure.
the World of Warcraft game. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have a warrior whose name is Grumbaz Crowsblood.
That was almost my name, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
A hunter named Bourbon Fang. A warlock named Sandry Darkshine. And a mage named Sophia Icecall.
Right. And these also, there are two characters per faction. The video game is divided into the Alliance and the Horde. And without getting too much into that, they're just these two warring factions. And so you'll have two of the classes go to the Alliance, two go to the Horde. But that plays very little part in this game.
So whichever character you choose, you're going to get a plastic miniature to represent that character on the board. And you're also going to get some character cards. You get four cards per character. And each one of these cards represents a different level. Like I said before, you're going to have the gray, green, yellow, and red levels. And so you'll get gray, green, yellow, and red cards for each of your characters. So as they level up, they'll have different stats on them and so forth. So each character is also going to get some tokens. There's a bag token, which represents your pack, which will carry all of your stuff. A quest log token, where you'll put completed quests. And some character markers, which are little tiny cardboard tokens that have a picture of your character on them. And you get a bunch of those because there's going to be certain quests in the game where you're going to have to put your character token on a location on the board and then go to that location. So you get plenty of those. They'll be used for various things. In addition, you're also going to get some discovery tokens in the game. These are going to be special tokens that represent actions and events that happen on the board, so they can be placed on different areas of the board. There'll be some damage tokens, which you'll be able to use to mark wounds and damage.
Not just a clever name.
And then you're also going to get a good number of cards in the game. And you'll get ability cards. Each player will have a deck of ability cards that they can use on their turn to do special abilities. And then there's also going to be two decks of quest cards. There's a starter deck and then an elite quest deck. So you'll be drawing cards from those to get your quests. And then there's going to be encounter cards. And those are the main cards in the game. There's four decks of those cards. As you can sort of see the theme here of four. There's four decks of cards for the four levels. So there's a gray deck, a green deck, a yellow deck, and a red deck. And there's also some pretty neat plastic holders to hold these decks of cards. And I'll explain in a second what those are used for. So the goal of the game is to obtain 8 Valor Points.
Not Victory Points.
No, not Victory Points, Valor Points.
All right.
I think we need to start using Valor Points for all of our games that require Victory Points.
Super, mega, awesome, fun time points.
I like that too.
Destruction Points.
Destruction
Points. As long as they're not Victory Points.
Yeah. And so you're going to get these 8 Valor Points by completing quests. You start the game with 2 quests from the starting quest deck, and then you can get more as you progress in the game. So you'll start off with those two, and then once you've passed out those starting quests, the starter deck goes away for the rest of the game. So after you've collected all of your stuff for your character, then you get to place your character's miniature on the board in any one of the 3 cities that are available on the board. And then you'll pretty much start the game. And here's how a game turn works. On your turn, you're going to roll the movement die, And the movement die has some special faces on it. It's not a normal six-sided die. And you're going to get a movement number, which is going to be anywhere between 1 and 4. And then next to that, you're also going to have on the face of your die a certain number of energy symbols. And there might be between 1 and 3 of these energy symbols. It's kind of balanced out that the more spaces you can move, the less energy you get, and vice versa. If you move less spaces, you can get more energy.
This was a good mechanic. I mean, it speeds up play with having the movement and the energy on one die, and it compensates, you know, people aren't flying around the board and having the ability to cast a lot of spells or use a lot of abilities.
Yeah, and it's those energy symbols that are going to be used to pull ability cards out of your deck. So the each card in your ability deck will cost a certain number of energy in order to play. So that's sort of your pool of energy for your turn. So after you move, and you can move up to the number of spaces that you rolled on the die, then you're going to look at the space that you're on, and you're going to start off by resolving any of the discovery tokens that might be there. And there are certain things in the game that will cause tokens to be placed on the board, so you'll just look and see if there's any tokens. If so, you'll turn those over and then resolve what they do. And there's a real nice chart on the back of the rule book that'll explain what those different things do. Some are good and some are bad. If you do happen to encounter any discovery tokens, then you don't get to do this next step, which is to resolve a resource on your space. So on the board itself, there's going to be some little diagrams, little pictures of certain resources that you can get from your space. And so you can pick one of those resources. These might be things like healing, drawing an ability card, drawing a new quest card, things like that.
Sure, and a lot of these icons, again, if you play the computer game, they tend to match up. Like the healing potions look the same, the quest icon looks the same. So again, if you've played the video game, you're just one step ahead. You're intimately a little more familiar with the game.
Yeah, and as someone who hasn't played the video game, it still wasn't difficult to figure out what those things meant. There's also a really nice little legend on the board itself to tell you what those icons mean. That was really helpful too. Okay, so if you have any of those discovery tokens to resolve, then you won't get to do the resource step. But anyway, you'll resolve a resource, and then comes the challenge phase. And on the challenge phase, you can do one of three things. Now, if another character is on your space, then you have the option of attacking that character. And this is one thing that a lot of other role-playing style board games don't have, is the ability to attack other players. And so that this game definitely has that, where you can attack and possibly steal things from other players. So you can do that. Or if there is already a undefeated bad guy or monster on at that space, then you'll have to fight that bad guy. If there isn't any bad guy on that space, then you can draw a card. Actually, you have to draw a card from one of the encounter decks and resolve that. So I mentioned that there are four encounter decks in the game representing the four different levels. So if you land on a gray space and you get to your challenge phase, you'll pull a card from the gray deck. Now here's where those little plastic trays come into play for the cards. Unlike most games where you pull a card from the top, you're going to actually pull these cards from the bottom of the deck. So the little plastic tray lifts the deck up and it makes it real easy for you to be able to slide the card out of the bottom. Why would you do that? Well, the cards in this game are double-sided. And so on the top of the card, you're going to see the monster or bad guy that you have to fight. If you happen to defeat that monster, then on the other side of the card, you flip it over, and then that's the item or ability or whatever that you get as a reward for completing that encounter. And if you don't complete the encounter, then or the bad guy defeats you or whatever, then the card for that encounter will go onto the undefeated encounter track on the board. And you'll place a little token on the space there, and you'll kind of have this on the board, this big list of cards of things that haven't been defeated. So that's kind of a neat mechanic in the game, I think, to have the double-sided card, because you never really know what you're going to get from a bad guy until you actually defeat him.
Yeah, that's something that was neat. And the monsters you fight and items you receive for each of the four levels, again, I sound like a broken record, they correspond well to what you would fight at about that level range in the game. That's one thing you can really tell that they did their homework on, was that mechanically and along with the theme, they managed to line everything up pretty well.
You're doing a real good job in your World of Warcraft consultation role.
I know it's been months since I've played, but you remember quite a bit after a while.
I hope you're getting a good fee from Blizzard.
The check's in the mail. That's what they keep telling me.
Okay. So during the challenge phase, you're going to be attacking something, either another character or a monster that's already on the board, or you're going to draw a new monster from the encounter deck and fight it. Combat is very, very simple. The attacker is going to roll the six-sided combat die, and then you have one of the other players roll for the monster. You're going to take that, whatever roll you get on the die, and you're going to add that to a stat for either ranged or melee combat. You'll get a total number. You compare the two numbers together. Whichever one's the higher one is the winner. And then you'll deal a certain amount of damage that's listed on your character card to that bad guy. All the bad guys have only one wound, so if you can deal them one wound, then they die. Oh, you know, I take that back. I think there's a couple that have two, but
there's some beefy ones in there.
But the great majority of them only have one. And so then once that encounter is over, then it's over. The combat doesn't continue on to further rounds. I mean, if you... some games have a mechanic where if you don't die, then you keep fighting until one of you dies, but that's not the case here. After you finish that one round of combat, even if both of you are still alive, then the turn ends. So as I mentioned, there's four areas on the board that are of different colors, and you can only go to certain areas if you're at a certain level. So you're going to start out on the gray areas of the board because your character's at gray levels. And how do you level up? Well, you go to these certain spaces that are on the board that will have an icon on them that say that if you defeat this encounter, you will gain the next level.
And if you played the computer game, these all match up to the large dungeons that are known as instances in the game. So veteran players will be able to easily recognize where they need to go to level up.
Yep, and so if you defeat the encounter there, then you will level up and you'll begin using the updated character card that's for your new level. That'll get you new stats, and it'll also open up a new area of the board for you to be able to explore. So the whole point of this game is that you're trying to go around and complete these quests. And so leveling up can be important for those, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. The quests involve things such as if you defeat a particular character, like if you defeat another opponent, then you might win a quest. Or more often than not, the quests involve taking some of your character tokens, placing them on a couple of different areas on the board. Then you have to travel to those areas and collect those character tokens, and then you'll get the number of valor points that are on that quest. And so that is the basics of the game there. You're just going to be kind of walking around on the board, encountering these bad guys, fighting them, getting more stuff, and then trying to complete these quests. One nice thing about the items that you get when you defeat a bad guy is that some items you're not going to be able to use because of the kind of character that you are.
Boy, don't I know that.
That happened a lot in our game.
I was playing a warlock and I'm getting, you know, here, have this plate armor. Here, have this big axe.
Yeah.
Great, thank you.
But one nice balance mechanic that we found in the game is that if you happen to get something that you can't use, there's always going to be another icon on that item card that's going to represent either healing or speed or energy that you can use that as like a potion. And so you can add to your energy number, or you can get healed a damage or something like that. So you're never going to have a card in your bag that's just absolutely useless to you.
Right. It's a nice consolation prize, if nothing else.
Yeah. So one other final element I want to mention about the game is the ability card deck that each character gets. And this is probably a aspect of the game that might appeal to collectible card game players out there. In that you can play these cards during different parts of your turn. There's an icon for movement, for combat, and there's also like a special icon where you can play that card at a particular time. But you can spend your energy on your turn to play these cards, and they're going to modify your character. They're going to give it a better weapon for a particular turn, or it's going to add some kind of ability that turn. But these ability cards really do play kind of like enchantments or sorceries or equipment in a collectible card game to modify your character. So it can make the combat a little bit more interesting. So that's a nice mechanic in the game to have the energy and the ability cards. But that is basically the whole game. You're going to walk around, try to complete these quests. The first player to get to 8 valor points is the winner.
Yeah, pretty straightforward.
Well, now that we've talked about the gameplay, let's just discuss a little bit about what we thought about the game. Cody, what did you think of World of Warcraft, the adventure game?
It was better than the first try at a World of Warcraft board game. I'll give it that. As I mentioned during John's gameplay and component overview, they really did a great job of matching this up with the video game. The abilities are equal to what a character of that class would have. You know, it's if you're playing a warlock, you're very familiar with all the different spells they're going to have. The components are well done. The map is top-notch. And like I said, you're already a leg up on a fairly easy game if you've played the computer game before.
Yeah, you definitely can't argue with the component quality of the game, and I appreciate you speaking to the tie-in with the video game, because, of course, I don't have that experience. But,
you're welcome.
But I kind of found that as RPG adventure games go, that this one was a little bit lacking for me. I did enjoy the theme of the game and what you were trying to do, but there were a couple of specific things that I had a real problem with in the game. And one of them seemed to be a strength at first, but ended up not being that. And that is that player interaction seems to be really encouraged in this game, because you have a lot of quests that require that you go and defeat a character. Mm-hmm. In the game we played, I think that was one of Cody's quests, is that he spent the whole game trying to chase me around the board to kill me. And if he did, then he would get, you know, lots of valor points for that. But what I found is that player interaction is encouraged, I guess, but it really doesn't seem necessary,
right,
to beat the game or to win. And even more so, this is probably the part that I had the most problem with, is that leveling up seems to be such a big deal in the game, of going to these spaces and getting access to different places on the board and, you know, getting the better monsters and the better abilities. But that even doesn't seem like it's necessary to win the game.
Oh yeah, you can nickel and dime your way, you know, with the smaller quest and eventually get enough valor points to win. Like, I won the game, the first game we played, and I was yellow, mm-hmm. you know, the second highest level, and I had just gotten yellow too. I didn't even really need it.
Yeah, we never even saw any of the red cards, and nor did we even, you know, really need to in order to play through the game. And a lot of that is because when you go to these cities, we talked about resolving those resources. One of the resources in the city is the quest icon, where you can actually draw a new quest card from the elite quest deck and then trade out. You can only have two at a time, but you can trade out your quest. So if you draw something and it requires you to go to a level red area and you just don't want to do that, then you can just trade it out for something else.
Right. And the leveling up aspect also speaks to, there's a lack of a sense of urgency. There's no real defined end game. It's kind of like you start and it's like, get to 8 victory points, or valor points, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And you know, that you don't really sense like, okay, you know, now we're getting into the big bad thing, which is one thing the original World of Warcraft board game kind of had. It's like, there was an end game. You're like, okay, now we need to buckle down and finish this out. Whereas this game just kind of, it becomes almost just monotonous, really.
Yeah, and I'll draw the comparison to Runebound. I know I've mentioned that game a lot, but it's one of my favorite RPG-style board games. And one nice thing about that game is that you're trying to level up and you're trying to get to the big red bad guys, because the whole point of the game is to defeat the big bad dragon at the end. And that's the whole point of the game. So you're definitely driving towards that goal. But in this game, it just sort of seemed like you're meandering around the board, trying to find monsters that are going to give you the items that you need, and just trying to accumulate these points. Now, we only played a 2-player game, so maybe adding a couple of players might make that feel different, but it just seemed like it got, like you said, monotonous after a while. Like, it was just, there was not a lot of dice, so you just kind of roll this die, move, do combat, and just became very repetitive after a while.
Right. Like I said, without some definite phases in the overall gameplay, it got old really fast.
All right, Cody, so we're at that magic moment.
Oh, boy.
World of Warcraft, the adventure game. Buy, try, or deny?
I'm going to actually give this one a deny.
Oh my.
I know.
Episode 3 and we're already at the first deny.
I'm throwing it down. I will say, if you're a big World of Warcraft fan, at least try it just to kind of satisfy your itch. But I deny it. It's a good game on its own. Like I said, there are parts that have merit. But if you're looking for a kind of overland fantasy adventure game, there are games already out there that do it better. Runebound, we've mentioned. If you wanted to go even lighter, I mean, Talisman would even be... Yeah, you're going on a more simplistic bend, but... And with games out there that just do it better, I'll have to give World of Warcraft The Adventure Game a deny. Now, John, what do you give World of Warcraft The Adventure Game? Buy, try, or deny?
Well, because I'm not a heartless jerk like you, I'm going to give...
I'm just calling balls and strikes here, man.
I'm just kidding. I'm going to give this one a try, but it's kind of like a try minus. I completely agree with you.
You're just making up stuff.
It's our podcast.
That's right.
I agree with you, Cody, that there are several other games in this genre that do a lot better job than this game. Runebound definitely comes to mind as one, and Talisman. But if you're a huge World of Warcraft fan, I think that you might just find that the theme of this game...
Oh, that's what we call a callback, kids.
Tie-in, yeah. The theme of this game is going to be appealing to you, and just being able to walk around some familiar places and do familiar things from the World of Warcraft world...
I'll agree with you there.
...might make this appealing to you. But I can't say this game is going to get a whole lot more plays at our table... but I'll still put it in the try category. It's got some quality there, but not one of the best that I've played.
And there you have it for World of Warcraft The Adventure Game. John gave it a try.
And Cody gave it a deny.
Oh my. We still love you, Fantasy Flight.
Corey, you're a good designer. You're still
hey,
a good
Battlestar
designer.
Battlestar Galactica was awesome, man.
It's all right.
Keep
it's
your
all
head
right.
Up.
Just, you know, keep moving forward.
All right. You ready to close out the show, John?
I am definitely ready to close out the show.
Well, there you have it. Episode 3 of Game On is in the books. How do you think we did?
Oh, you know, I think we did at least as good as the last two episodes.
At least. The bar is set. We did get Tom Vassell's opinion on it, and here it is.
It's not as... not that good. I mean, it's good, but...
Well, thanks, Tom. We appreciate that feedback.
We're just kidding.
We're just kidding. We love you, Tom.
We love you. And we have a couple of other things to remind you of. Of course, the big deal... Requiem for a Theme. If you have some comments on that, feel free to contact us at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
You know it. And then also check out our new Game On Guild at BoardGameGeek.com. We do have our contest, which is related to that guild on BoardGameGeek. All you need to do is find the Episode 3 contest thread and post.
Yep, just one post will do it, and although you're welcome to post as many times
Please
as you want.
Keep on posting.
Only one entry though, per person.
Yes.
But that'll set you up to be entered to our contest to win a copy of Fairy Tale, that great card game by Z-Man Games.
Fantastic. Z-Man Games put out some good stuff.
Good Agricola by Z-Man Games.
Oh, you tricked me
I tricked
there.
You.
That was a trap.
Oh, well.
And that puts episode 3 of Game On in the books.
That's right. And stay tuned in 2 weeks for episode 4 of Game On, where we're going to take a look at A Game of Thrones, the living card game.
I've been really looking forward to this one. The LCG concept is an intriguing one, so we'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, we'll take a look at the LCG concept and give you a full review of that new release of that game. So
until then, we'll see you on the forums, and game on. Yeah, that game was just really catching on. It was almost like an epidemic.
Almost. Very clever there.
It's kind of like a pandemic, but
that's very nice.
I tried.
Like a Peter pandemic. I don't know what that is.
What was that?
Moving on.
Edit that.
We will not be putting that in.
That's the blooper.